Read 1 Chronicles 29, 10 through 18, if you'd like to read along. Therefore David blessed the Lord before all the assembly, and David said, "Blessed are you, Lord, God of Israel, our Father forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness, the power and the glory, the victory and the majesty, for all that is in heaven and in earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head over all. Both riches and honor become from you. You are, and your reign over all. In your hand is power and might. In your hand it is to make great and to give strength to all. Now, therefore, our God, we thank you and praise your glorious name. But who am I, and who are my people, that we should be able to offer of willingly as this? For all things come from you, and of your own we have given you, for we are aliens and pilgrims before you, as were all our fathers. Our days on earth are as a shadow and without hope. O Lord, our God, all this abundance that you have prepared to build you a house for your holy name is from your hand and is all your own. I know also, my God, that you test the heart and have pleasure in uprightness. As for me, in the uprightness of my heart, I have willingly offered all these things, and now with joy I have seen your people who are present here to offer willingly to you. O Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, our fathers, keep this forever in the intent of the thoughts of the heart of your people, and fix their heart towards you."
A couple of weekends ago, I was asked to speak at the Memorial Day meeting at the Murray Road congregation, and the elders there asked me to address a topic, quote, called Handling Finances in a Godly Way. And so I'm going to share some similar thoughts with you this morning. It's not an exact replication of that sermon, but it's certainly got some overlap, because I found it to be a relatively good exercise, and honestly, this is a topic that I'm incredibly interested in and incredibly passionate about. I told Shelby as I was putting this lesson together, it's probably the first sermon that I could talk for an hour with no notes on. There's a lot to say, and I've got a lot to say. It may not all be good to say, but I feel like I've got a lot to say about this topic of finances and money. Money is a relevant topic to almost everybody in this room. Money has relevance in our lives from the age of 15, 16, 17 when we get our first job till the age that we're basically in the grave, unless we lose our capacity at the end of life to make good, sound financial decisions. We are making financial decisions. We are dealing with money our entire lives. It plays such a role in our lives. It's our means of providing for ourselves and our families. Everything that I own came from money. Now, some of them were gifts. Some of them came in various things. But everything that I have, everything that's in my house, everything that's in my car, everything that I'm wearing, you exchange money for. You know, money's just a fascinating concept. It's just these little pieces of paper that we put in our pocket, but it lets us do amazing things. You know, if you think about it, like, if you have enough pieces of paper in your pocket, you can give it to somebody and they will fly you across the country. Like, that blows my mind. But it's so powerful. It represents power. It represents status. It represents success, luxury. It's our means of providing food and medicine for ourselves and our families, our houses for our families. It allows us to fly across the world, but it also can provide freedom, a sense of freedom, comfort, and security. Money has been the source of countless struggles and stresses in people's lives, joy and relief. Tears and tears and tears of despair have been shed because of money. And tears of relief have been shed because of money. When things are tight, when you're not sure where that next check is going to come from, and somehow magically it's something appears, relief and joy, exasperation, all is centered around money. You can learn a lot about a person by looking at 3 months' worth of their bank statements. You can learn an amazing amount. You can black out an address, black out a name. And if you give somebody 3 months' worth of bank statements, you can tell primarily where they work, how much they make, what they spend their money on, what their hobbies are, what they do for entertainment, how generous they are, what they're making their payments on, houses, cars, credit cards. If you stack up 3 months' worth of bank statements, you can tell a lot about a person. What we spend our money on tells us a lot about ourselves. One man who's not a religious man necessarily, but a financial advisor or what have you in America today, wrote and made the observation that men and women tend to view money differently. Well, there's a shock. Men and women tend to view money differently. And he said fundamentally in America, this is painting broad strokes, but women tend to view money as a source of security. They're not so caught up in how much exactly, but they just want it's a sense of safety. They just want to know that there's enough there that everything's taken care of. Men, on the other hand, tend to view money as a scorecard. You're looking around, what's that guy make? What's this guy make? How big's his boat? Women tend to view money as a source of security, and men tend to view money as a scorecard. And when you think about it, those are both very foolish things. The men's far more foolish, so we get shame on us even more. But money ought not to be our sense of security. And in contemporary America, if that's how men measure themselves against other men, what a sad society we live in. If the size of our paycheck is the measure of how good of a man we are. In the NIV, which I don't use, but I have the Strong's from the NIV, so when I'm counting words, I have to... In the NIV, we find the word money or riches or wealth or some derivation of that word. Money, riches, or wealth or some derivation of that word 400 times in the Bible. 400 times. God has no lack of discussion on the matter, so it's obviously important to him to warrant this many mentions. In my estimation, God gives us three primary resources in our lives. And he gives them to us in varying degrees. He gives us time, he gives us talents, and he gives us money. Why? Well, Ephesians 5:16 and other places tells us to redeem the time because the days are evil. I think he gives us times to see what we're going to do with it. Talents in 1 Peter 4:10 and other places, it tells us that we are to make use of the gifts. Romans 12 also, that we are to make use of the gifts that God gives us. And we have money. Why? Well, because I believe God wants to know what we're going to do with it. I'd like to take a little bit and talk about the stewardship of our money, and I'm going to say some things that probably won't be overly surprising to you, but we'll start there and then branch on from there. We are to be good stewards of our money. And we can turn no farther than Matthew chapter 25, verse 14 to find this. I'm going to rattle through a lot of scriptures because there's a lot to be said on this. And some of them I'll turn to and read. Some of them I'll just mention. And I'm not a huge note taker myself. And you certainly don't have to write down any observations or anything that I'm going to make because they're not going to be necessarily fantastic. They might be, but... But I am going to rattle off some verses here. And it might be a good idea to jot these verses down and take a look at them. Because there is, as I was putting this lesson together, there is so much to be said about money. And like I said, every one of us has to deal with these decisions. And so in my life, it was very good to put this lesson together and compare what it is that I do and what it is that the Bible tells me. So it might be good for you, just a slight encouragement, but make your own decision, to jot some of these verses down and review them maybe tonight or later this week to see what the Lord has to say about this subject matter. Matthew chapter 25, verses 14 through 30. I'm not going to turn there, but it's the parable of the talents. So I'll just lead with that. And I'm going to assume some familiarity with the story. There's three servants. The first two take their talents and do well with it, and the last one squanders it. And so what's the lesson that we are to learn from there? Well, God expects us to use the resources that He gives us. God expects us to do something with what He gives us. I know that this parable is not restricted to just money, but in my mind, it certainly does include money. Money is something that the Lord gives to us and expects us to do something about. Proverbs 27 and verse 23 also has to do with some stewardship. And it says, to be diligent to know the state of flocks and tend to your herds, for riches can be fleeting. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and your herds. Why? Because riches can come and go. If you don't pay attention to them, your riches may leave you. And so we ought to be diligent to understand what it is that we have and to take care of the things that we do have. 1 Timothy 5 and chapter 8. I'd like to read this passage. And it'll be very familiar to some of us. 1 Timothy 5, chapter 8. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially those of the household of faith, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. If anybody does not provide for his own, providing for your family, in my estimation, is the number one reason that we have wealth. And when I say wealth, I mean an income, a paycheck, a savings account, any assets that we might have. The number one reason that we have these things is to provide for our family. It is not to show off. It is not to have fun. And it is not a scorecard. God does not give us these things so we can have ridiculous amounts of toys and playtime. Buying things that you can't afford because you want it, because it's fun, or because it looks good is not good stewardship, and it's not providing for your family. Digging yourself and a family into a financial hole to go on vacation, to buy power tools, to go shopping, or to go to a fancy dinner is not good stewardship. And in my estimation, it's not providing for your family. It's just not. But that's the way of a lot of Americans these days. And I'm thankful right now that I don't know much about anybody's financial situation. I know two people's salaries in this room, and one's right here and one's sitting over there. I don't know what anybody makes, and I don't know much about your financial situation. So, and I'm thankful for that, so I can speak to a blank wall. So I'm not casting stones or saying anything about anybody or anybody's situation. I'm just making observations that I find from the Scriptures. Digging yourself in a financial hole to get these things because you want them is not good stewardship. And I'm kind of alluding to it, but we're talking about these little plastic things that have MasterCard and Visa in your pocket. I'm not going to say the word credit cards, but I'm talking about credit cards. And I'm not saying that any time a credit card's used that it's a bad thing or that it's a sin. I have a whole lot of credit cards that rack up airline miles. One of the things before we got married, Shelby said, I don't necessarily want you to close them, but can you at least write them all down? I have a lot of credit cards. I do. But racking up debts on these things just so we can have fancier things or shinier things or things that we're just to have some fun, that's not good stewardship. And it's not what the Lord would have us to do with our money. When He gives us these three resources, I can't imagine that that's what the Lord wants us to do with these things. So is debt wrong? I've heard that said before. I've heard that question asked before. Is debt wrong? And a lot of that comes from Romans chapter 13 and verse 8, where I'll paraphrase it, but it basically says, owe no man anything except love. Romans 13 and 8 kind of says that. Well, I don't think that debt's wrong. I work at a bank, so I certainly that would be a little bit of an odd situation if I thought so. I don't think that debt is wrong. And there's a couple of reasons for that. With respect to this passage here in Romans 13, if you look back in Romans 13 verse 7, it talks about owing taxes. And so obviously it can't be wrong to be indebted to people for some things because they only had taxes that were outstanding that had to be paid. I believe it's talking about don't owe anybody anything beyond what is due. If you take out an obligation, you shouldn't be past due. If you sign a contract, you should agree to it. You should not be indebted to somebody outside of the obligation of your contract. Further emphasizing this point that I don't believe debt is wrong, though I do believe debt can be very, very, very foolish. But I don't believe that it's wrong. In Leviticus chapter 25, talking to the children of Israel, it says not to charge usury to the poor. Don't take advantage of the poor or the downtrodden. But the implication there is that it's okay to charge usury or interest to those who are sufficient, that those do have some means. And also, if we just turn to Matthew chapter 25, the parable of the talents that we just looked at, the foolish servant was chastised for not at least taking it to the bankers and earning interest. And you can't have interest paid or in any sort of a banking system unless there's some sort of financial transactions and loans going on. So I don't think that that's necessarily wrong, but it is a strong caution. I've also heard the question asked, is it wrong to save for retirement? And that question tends to come from, and we might turn there, Luke chapter 12, verse 16. Is saving for retirement wrong? In Luke chapter 12, verse 16, we have a story of a young man. As I turn there, Luke chapter 12 and verse 16. In verse 13, we have, it says, and one of the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." And so Christ says, well, I'm paraphrased, Christ says, "I'm not a judge, so who made me judge over these things?" And then he drops down into verse 16 and he speaks this parable. Then the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully, and he thought within himself, saying, "What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?" So he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store my crops and my good. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.'" And then in verse 20 and 21, I won't go there, but the gentleman ends up dying. The Lord required his soul of him. So does that mean that we aren't to retire? This guy was coming into some wealth, some excessive wealth. He had some barns full of some things. Not retire. Should we not save up for retirement? He had some savings, and he had some more income coming in, so he needed to build a bigger barn so he could save up more savings. Does that mean that we shouldn't save for the future? Well, I don't think so. And there's a couple of reasons for that. This is in response to a man who was fighting with his brother over money. It's not talking about good stewardship or planning for ahead. He was not necessarily, perhaps, overly generous, and it doesn't seem like he was a man who was nearing retirement age. He was just a man that was looking to get a large lump sum and to take this money and sit back and so he could eat, drink, and be merry. Depends on what we're going to do with our finances. It doesn't appear that he was going to want to do well with his retirement or anything like that, but he just wanted to sit on this pile of cash and enjoy it. There's a number of scriptures that tend to say that saving for the future is a good idea. Proverbs 6 and 6, talking about the ants and the sluggard and how the ant makes provisions while the going is good. Proverbs 21 and 20 also says that the house of the wise has stored up some treasures and oil, but the foolish have squandered it, implying that good stewardship and savings is a good thing. And then if we go back to Genesis chapter 41, talking about Joseph, and there was the situation where there was the 7 years of good harvest followed by the 7 years of famine, what did Joseph do? He stored and stored and stored that stuff away for the rainy day. And pulling things back and pulling some of our resources back for that, I think, are certainly appropriate. But I have had people come across this passage and ask, does that mean that we shouldn't save for retirement or things of that nature? And I don't believe that to be the case. So if it's okay for us to save up and it's okay for us to use our money wisely, what else are we to do? Well, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28 sheds a little bit more insight on this. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28 says, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need." It's talking about thieves and saying, let him who steal change, as they're putting on Christ and putting on the new man, change your ways. If you stole, steal no more. Why? The last phrase of that verse, that he may have something to give him who has need, so that he can give. I said the number one priority that we have wealth, or that we have an income, or they have assets, is to provide for our family. And then followed right behind that, number two, is so we can give. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9, it's the verse that Nancy put on the bulletin. And the New American Standard Version says, "Honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce. Honor the Lord from your wealth. Lonnie just read a passage in 1 Chronicles chapter 29, and it's a story of where David gathered up all the resources for the temple. He wasn't allowed to build the temple. His son was going to build the temple. But so what did he do? He gathered up all the resources. He couldn't construct the temple, but he wanted to help as much as he could. And in chapter 29 of that passage that Lonnie read, in verses 14 and 15, we have an interesting phrase by David. He's praying to the Lord, and he says in verse 14, "But who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer so willingly as this? Who are we that we would be so prosperous that we can give these things back to you?" Verse 14, "For all things come from you, and of your own we have given you." David understood that everything that they were acquiring for this temple came from the Lord himself. And he was thankful for the ability to give to God. He wasn't thanking God for the ability to build a super nice house. He probably was thankful and maybe have thanked him at times of that in the past. But he wasn't thankful that they were able to do all of these other things. He was thankful that we were able to give back so generously. That's a man who understands, and he was incredibly wealthy. That's a man who understands where his wealth came from. And he was thankful that he could give some back to the Lord. So what is our mind frame with respect to giving back to the Lord? Or what is our mind frame with respect to giving? Well, when it comes to giving to the Lord, here in Proverbs 3, it says that we are to honor him with our wealth. We're to give of our first fruits, not our middle fruits, not our last fruits, but we are to give our first fruits. So after we've provided for our family, I believe we are to provide for the Lord. 10% is what the Old Testament was required. We know that tithing is borne out multiple times in the Old Testament, that they were asked to give 10%. What are we asked to give in the New Testament? What's it say? Somebody knows. We know it. As what? As we have prospered. Okay, so the precedent that we have in the Old Testament is 10%. The command that we have in the New Testament is as we have prospered. Okay, so now we're going to step into a little bit of Shane's opinion. But if they were told to give 10%, and I look at what I have air conditioning, I have a car, I have a nice house, I have the ability to give people paper and can fly me across the country, it's very difficult for me to think that I'm less prosperous than those people. And if the Lord required 10% from them, I've got a tough time convincing myself, looking God in the eye and saying, well, yeah, they could afford 10%, but I can't. It doesn't say 10% in the Bible. It says as prospered, and this is my opinion. But I would have a tough time standing before the Lord telling him that I could not afford 10%. And we can get into all kinds of questions, and I'm not going to come up with some mathematical formula. I just want people to think here. You know, is that 10% before taxes or after taxes, or does that include the 401k match or our health benefits? Or, you know, we're going to get into very pharisaical type things very quickly where we're scooping out just the last grain of our spices to try and get exactly 10%. That's not the point. The point is we're blessed, and we have the ability to give by and large as a group. Again, I don't know anybody here's specific situation, but I know for myself, I think I'm more prosperous than virtually every person I find in the Old Testament. I may not have as many servants as they had. I may not have as much land as they have, but I've got a smartphone and I've got air conditioning. And if they could afford 10%, it's tough for me to think that I could not do so as well. Luke chapter 6, verse 30, there's a number of verses. Luke chapter 6, verse 30 tells us that we are to give to those who ask. Acts 20 and 35 says it's more blessed to give than receive. Matthew 25, verses 35 through 36 talks about feeding the hungry and hospitality and clothing. 1 John chapter 3, verse 17. Please turn there with me. 1 John chapter 3, verse 17. There's a number of verses on giving, but this one I think kind of cuts to the heart a little bit. 1 John chapter 3, verse 17. "But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him?" If you have things and you see your brother in need but aren't willing to part with them, how does the love of God abide in him? I think I know everybody here well enough to say that we can agree that giving is a good thing. We all know that. We all know that giving is a good thing. We all know that being a good steward of our money is a good thing. If we walked in this morning and as everybody walked in the door, I said, is being a good steward a wise thing? I think everybody would say yes. And if I ask a follow-up question and said, have you always been a good steward in your life? Most of us would probably say no. I know that's the case for me. So why is that? We know that giving is good. We know that being a steward is good. But we haven't always done it. Well, why aren't we always as giving as we should? Well, let's just call a spade a spade. To be candid, at times we're selfish, right? That's the root. I think that's the antithesis, the enemy of generosity, is selfishness. Sometimes we try to sugarcoat it. Sometimes we try to hide it. Sometimes we may not realize it in the moment. But later, when you step back and look, oftentimes in my life, it's selfishness. Other times could be that we maybe are afraid that we can't afford it. That at this moment, in this specific instance, I need to save all that I can get, etc. That right now I don't have that much, but perhaps later I will be able to be more giving. When I was in college, I had multiple jobs that were college-type jobs that didn't pay overly well. Many of you remember when I was at Kmart and had the red vest. I made like 5 1/4 an hour or something like that. It was not exactly rolling in cash. When I was in college, I did not consistently contribute to the collection plate. And I don't know if this person, there's an older brother in the congregation. He's in the room right now. I won't say names, but his initials are Gerald Clevenger. He was teaching a college class downstairs. And at one time, and I never asked him, I'm putting him on the spot, he might not even remember this. And I don't know if he'd noticed that I hadn't been putting in the collection plate, but I hadn't put in the collection plate for, I don't know, a while. And he was teaching a class downstairs in the corner classroom right down here with the window, and he was teaching a class, and he made a statement, and I felt like he looked me right in the eye. It's one of those things, he probably had no idea, and it's just a guilty conscience type of thing. But he was going over something, and he made the statement, and I'll never forget it. He said, you can be just as generous now as at any other time in your life. You can be just as generous right now as any other time in your life. What's he talking about? What was he talking about? He's talking about the woman with two mites, right? Generosity is not measured in dollar bills or how big. It's measured in a heart, and it's measured in a willingness, and it's measured in trust of God. We can be just as generous right now as at any time. Yeah, our paychecks may increase, our financial situation may increase, our contributions may increase. But we can be just as generous now as we can at any other times in our lives. And we should be. If you don't make enough to be generous right now, that may be the case. That very well may be the case. But I urge you to consider a look around your closet, your garage, your living room, and think about convincing God that you couldn't afford to be more generous. Sorry, I've got a lot of thoughts here. I'm not sure which place to go to now. I'll go this way. Financial stresses do happen, and they're very real, and I'm not trying to downplay those at all. I bought my house in June of 2010, and shortly after that, in the fall of 2010, it was becoming increasingly clear that my position at Commerce Bank was no longer going to be around. Partially it was due to my performance. I was in sales, and I wasn't all that good of a salesman, and I was also trying to be a lender in 2008 when the economy had just crashed, so that wasn't a real good mix. But you could see the train coming, that Shane's time at Commerce Bank was going to be coming to an end sooner rather than later. And I had just bought a house, and I was a little concerned. And I didn't tell hardly anybody. I told very few people, but we were in the mode of selling things out of the basement to stockpile cash because we weren't quite sure how things were going to go. I had a blue drum set. I love that thing. Gone. I was selling things because I'm like, I don't know how long I'm going to be here. I don't know what's going to happen, so I need to accumulate things. And I suspended my contributions for a time. And so if you think about this, I wasn't saying, Lord, give me enough to provide for myself. I wasn't praying that I had enough clothes to put on my back or food to eat. I was in full-on hunker down, how can I keep this house? Because I deserve this house. And so, God, I can't give right now because I need to keep this house. How ludicrous is that? It's a house. It's a dumb house. It's fine. You know, looking back, it's embarrassing that I would think that that house is more important than my generosity or my giving back. It's a shameful thing, but it's the truth. And I understand. I've been there at times. Matthew chapter 6, verse 25 to 26 says that the Lord will provide. The Lord will provide. And He will provide enough. The problem is, what we think is enough and what He thinks is enough aren't always the same. Hebrews 13 and 5 tells us to be content and that the Lord will not leave us. I meant to write it on the board, but I didn't. I said that the two primary things that I think that we should do is be good stewards and to be generous. We are to provide for our family, number one, and then we are to be giving. And I think the two major temptations with respect to our finances is being greedy and being wasteful. The enemy of being generous is greed, and the enemy of being a good steward is just being wasteful. And I think the Lord would not be pleased with us being either of those things. I've met people that say, well, there's no sense in having a budget, or there's no sense trying to be a good steward. I'll never be rich. I'll never get ahead. So I'm just going to keep on keeping on as I am, and one day they'll put me in the ground. Well, I don't know. Their situations vary, but it's never hopeless. And I think that having a plan with the resources that God gives us is a wise thing. I think we ought to consider all three things behind us and how it is that we spend those things. I think it could be wise to have a budget on all three of the things that are behind me and how we purposely and intend to use those things, because eventually we won't have them anymore. There's a lot of warnings about money in the Bible, and I'm just going to read through a whole list of verses here very quickly. Ecclesiastes 5 and 10 says that those who love money are never satisfied. If you love money, you're never going to get there. That's a treadmill that just does not end. There's been twice in my life that I thought, you know, if I make this money, I'll really be cooking. You know what? I've hit both those marks. It doesn't feel much different. I kind of want to put a third one out there, but I'm like, well, what's the point? You know, if you love money, you will not be satisfied. It's a treadmill that you can't get off. Matthew 6:24 says that we can't serve two masters. No man can serve both God and mammon. You can't do it. 1 Timothy 1, 6 and 10 says the love of money is the root of all evil. 1 Timothy 6, 17 gives a strong admonition against the rich that they shouldn't be arrogant, but that they should put their hope in God. Proverbs 10 and 4 says lazy hands bring poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. There's on and on. I've got another 6 or 7 verses here, but I just won't take the time to go through them all. There's warning after warning about how we are to spend our money, or what we are to do with these things. We ought not to be caught up in it too much, but we ought to be conscious of how we choose to spend it. As I start to draw my thoughts to a close here a little bit, I'd like to turn to Luke chapter 3. If you'll turn with me, please. Luke chapter 3. And we'll be looking at verses. There's a story in verses 7 through 14. Regarding John the Baptizer and some of the people that came out to see him by the Jordan or out in the wilderness. And in verse 7, John the Baptizer, it says, "Then he said to the multitudes that came out to be baptized by him, 'Brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath to come?'" So he calls them a brood of vipers. And then in verse 8, he says, "Therefore, bear fruits worthy of repentance." So he tells them to bear good fruits. If we go on down, he says that if you don't bear good fruits, in verse 9, it says, "Even now, the axe is laid to the root of the trees. Therefore, every tree which does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire." I may have recounted this a little choppy. I'm sorry. But he calls them a brood of vipers. He tells them that they need to bear good fruits. And then in verse 9, he says, trees that don't bear good fruit are going to be chopped down. Trees that do bear good fruit are going to remain. So in verse 10, we have a response for the people. After John the Baptizer calls them a brood of vipers and says, bear good fruit. Verse 10, they say, "What shall we do?" Okay, we're supposed to bear good fruit. What shall we do? Verse 11, he says, "He who has two tunics, let him give to those who have none, and he who has food, let him do likewise." Okay, we're supposed to bear good fruit. What do we need to do? He says, be generous. Be giving. Let's go down. Verse 12, then the tax collectors also came to be baptized and says, teachers, what shall we do? Verse 13, he says, collect no more than is what appointed to you. So they're supposed to bear good fruit. What shall we do? He says, don't steal. Don't be dishonest. Just collect what is proper. Verse 13, then we have the soldiers. In verse 14, likewise, the soldiers ask him, and what shall we do? And his response to them, do not intimidate anyone or accuse falsely, and be content with your wages. So here he tells them to bear fruit, and then they come back and say, what shall we do? And they did not ask a financial question at all. They said, okay, we need to bear good fruit. What are we supposed to do? But he gives them a financial answer. He says, be giving. He says, don't steal. And he says, be content with your wages that you have. I think that's very telling. In a situation that had nothing to do with money, nothing to do with finances, but had everything to do with being a good person. And the results and the actions that were to be taken had to do with their financial resources. I believe God gives us time to see how we will redeem it. I believe God gives us talents to see how we will use them. And I believe God gives us money to see how we will spend it. How do you spend your money? Not how did you, but how do you, or how will you? Like I said, we're all going to make financial decisions. And we've all made good ones and probably bad ones. And going forward, we might make some good and bad ones. But it's a decision every day. What are we going to do with the money that flows through? We're going to receive income. Most of us are going to continue to receive income. Most of us are going to continue to pay money out. Where's it going? What's it doing? Money is not evil. Money's not evil. Money is not evil. Money is not good. Money has no thoughts. Money has no feelings. Money doesn't care. Money doesn't care. Money does exactly what you tell it to. Money does exactly what you tell it to. So what are we going to tell our money to do? I think that's something that bears some consideration. When I think of all the things that are behind me and what that all entails, the Lord has given me three resources with respect to our physical world, but He's given us many, many, many more resources with respect to our spiritual. He's given us grace. He's given us mercy. He's given us compassion. One of the things the older I get that I'm more and more thankful for is the Lord granting me patience. Not allowing me to be patient, that the Lord is patient with me. Because there's been many times in my life that I was not ready to meet my Maker. And I don't know why. But He looked down and He said, I'm going to let him stay a little longer. Maybe get his act together. I don't know the situation of everybody here, but at this point we're going to offer the gospel invitation. I'm very thankful that the Lord has been patient with me and continues to be patient with me. And if He's been patient with you long enough that you can now accept Him as your Redeemer, please come forward and do so as we stand and sing the invitation song.